Good afternoon. I'm Luis Sainz, your host for the weekend. And joining us today is Professor Jose Villalobos. Dr. Villalobos is with the Political Science Department, and his area of expertise is the presidency. In fact, he's teaching a class this semester on the presidency. And so he just decided to join us now to talk a little bit about what's going on right now in Washington, because there's a lot of misconception about that. And Dr. Villalobos is going to help us out with a little bit of that. Dr. Villalobos, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, first of all, we were discussing a little bit earlier about, you know, your class and the presidency. And my gosh, what an opportunity, not one that we hope for, but to discuss this in your class.
Right. History sort of in the making, right? And it's always interesting to also look back at previous instances of these sort of things happening and figure out why they're happening, how it is that it dates back even to the mindset of the founders to some extent, what it means for the country and hopefully how the country can move forward, right, and provide lessons for the future. It actually can make for very good, healthy debate and discussion.
Let's talk a little bit about impeachment. What does that mean? Because you and I were discussing this along with Sam Cassiano, our producer engineer, that sometimes people have a misconception about an impeachment that it means removal from office.
So to kind of distill it, I mean, impeachment is something that you know you're in trouble. It's similar to being indicted, and it's going to go on the record. I mean, even if you don't end up getting impeached, just being in the process, it becomes part of a legacy, for better or worse, depending on the circumstances and how it turns out. So it's the first stage, but a lot of times people assume that that just means that the person is going to be removed. And I think a lot of people also assume that it's just having to do with presidents, but it can affect legislators. We've had in history a number of judges who have had to deal with impeachment and removal in over a dozen instances for some major federal judges across our history. So
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because it doesn't necessarily mean just for the presidents.
That's the most common and talked about, the most salient one that comes up, and you know, it dominates the headlines and things like that. But yeah, it's not exclusive to just the president.
We all know what happened in April 1865 when the Civil War just ended and President Lincoln was assassinated. His running mate, Vice President Andrew Johnson, takes over, and he does something completely opposite of what Lincoln was doing. And so he was the first one to face articles of impeachment. Is that correct?
Well, actually, just before him, when people do talk about this, most of the time they talk about Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and now Donald Trump. And then also Nixon had his own situation where he resigned. We'll get into. But even another one that's good to bring up is James Buchanan. In 1860, had an administration that had a lot of accusations of corruption. And he was not impeached. But the process, there was a committee that found that he hadn't done anything too bad to warrant impeachment. But that was actually the first hint of a president being challenged and presumably, you know, accused him to be held to account for some kind of major accusation. So there was already that kind of lurking around. And it's also good to mention, because he was a Democrat. And then, of course, not too long later, you have Andrew Johnson coming in, and he's the Republican vice president who takes over after Lincoln's assassination. And so you already, you know, there's also some party politics, and we won't get into that. But, you know, there's this two-party system happening across time. And so you get it on both sides, where the competition and, you know, the sense of everybody being held accountable, right? All political opposition forces, anybody who seems to be doing anything that's not proper will be challenged. And it's part of the way the founders wanted it. They wanted checks and balances between legislators and the legislative arena, for presidents oversee the executive branch, and of course in our judicial branch, and when it does judicial review. With Johnson, it was interesting because there was this piece of legislation that was passed, the Tenure of Office Act. And so we have presidents who will nominate or pick people to serve in their administration. And in the case of the Tenure of Office Act, when a president nominates somebody, then there are these important positions, usually the cabinet secretaries and such, that the Senate then has to confirm so these people can serve. And the way we have it is that there's that process to put people in, and then they serve at the pleasure of the president. But at this one point, there was this Tenure of Office Act that said that if a president wanted to then later remove somebody who had to be approved by the Senate, that the Senate also had to approve the removal. And Johnson didn't like that. He tried to veto the bill. The veto was overridden. And then he kind of ignored this law to some extent, to the point that they went after him and impeached him. And he was, by one vote, he did not get removed, because that's the other part. So impeachment, you get in trouble. Basically, you're indicted. And then you have to go in front of judge and jury. And for a president in this position, the judge and jury, it goes to the Senate. That's the second stage. The first stage is being impeached in the House, is like being indicted. And then the second stage, it goes to the Senate, and then the senators have to decide on removal. And that's where that misunderstanding often happens. So you can be impeached, but you're not yet removed. The removal part is the actual removal. And the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is the one who presides over that other stage, which we will also be getting to here in the near future. And in the case of Andrew Johnson, at the time, the vote was 35-19, falling one vote short of being removed. And very interestingly, the back end of the story is that ultimately that legislative act he had been impeached for violating and almost removed, ultimately it was deemed unconstitutional. So take that for what you will, but that's some of the nature of politics there. You know, not a lot is looked into that. And myself, I'm still learning a lot about that. I only know some of the basics, but it's good to go back to that kind of history. And then you can get into the more modern, recent era where we have, beginning with Nixon. He was self-removed from office, right? Because he resigned. He could see the writing on the wall. It looked like their votes were going to be there for him to be both impeached through the House and ultimately removed by the Senate. And so people get confused about that too. They think, well, what happened with Nixon? Was he impeached and removed? He actually resigned. By all accounts, it seemed like he was going to be the first president impeached, but he was, you know, he's always a very strategic president. You know, there were, throughout his legacy, he had his ups and downs, his foreign policy, domestic policy, successes and failures, and ultimately he was a very influential and powerful leader with a lot of powerful enemies. So he headed off in what way he could at the end to at least leave on his own terms. That was his way of dealing with it. And then we have the most recent situation, which in these last few years, in the cases of dealing with impeachment, it's the Clinton and Trump names, but not Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, former president, having been impeached, not removed, and now current serving President Trump, who is by all accounts looks like he's about to be impeached in the House. And expected not to be removed at the Senate level, but history is playing out.
Some people have indicated that, as you stated earlier about President Nixon and what happened there was the courts had subpoenaed his tapes, correct? Mm-hmm. And he refused to hand over those tapes. They appealed. The appeal was denied. And so that's, I think, when he resigned. And so some people are comparing that to President Trump and his refusal to turn over the disclosure of financial information and tax. And so some people went even as far as saying that he probably would resign.
Well, and that's why I said, you know, it's too early to call the game, even though there's a lot of people that are making predictions right now. You put it so well, because one of the things that happens with Nixon, too, is that sometimes you hear, like in certain flashbacks of on history, that, well, times were different back then, because back then the Republicans weren't so adamantly partisan or something like that, and that they were willing to go after Nixon because of these reasons you stated and just all the nature of what was happening. But in truth, the Republicans back then were very adamantly defending Nixon up to a certain point. But the way that things transpired, eventually he lost the support once more revelations came out. And just that the way that the whole thing played out, because that's another thing is when you have these situations happening, it's the accusation of what has been done, and also the way that the president handles it. You can be accused of abuse of power, one of the things that happened with Nixon, and then there can also be the obstruction of justice if you are making it more difficult for Congress to get to the truth. And this is where the debate is lying right now with Donald Trump, because in his case, he's also being the article of impeachment on abuse of power, and then the obstruction of justice. With Bill Clinton, he had not abuse of power, he had the perjury, lying about his relationship with Monica Lewinsky. But the other thing that he had to deal with was also obstruction of justice in trying to in lying about it and not being forthcoming about what actually, you know, happened and things behind the scene as the process was playing out. So with Clinton, he was impeached, and when it went to the Senate, he had a 45-50 vote and a 50-50 vote, so nowhere near the 2/3 needed to remove. But certainly it was, and it still is a stain on his presidency. And at one point he was saying, I think when they announced the articles of impeachment was right about Christmas time too, and he was saying he was going to serve until his last day. And so you never know how things will play out in politics. And he was spared removal, and he worked after that to solidify his overall legacy. And to this day, I mean, there are, you know, good number of people on the left who hold an overall positive view of his time in office. Of course, on the right, there are the detractors who see a negative legacy. But, you know, he served out his two terms, and with Donald Trump, I mean, it's all wide open right now. It's what's going to happen with this process, what's going to happen with the election, right? And 10, 20 years from now, we'll start to be able to look back and make more concrete comparisons. But we can look at the comparisons as they play out right now. And there's a lot of similarities, which I think as an educator and with my very, you know, insightful and talented students in my presidency class and other classes, that's the opportunity you get to sort of say, hey, look at all these different examples. We've got people from both sides in different parts of history that have had to deal with this situation. And what do we think overall about the institution? What do we think about, you know, the way the founding fathers set things up, the way that it's played out, and how can we move forward whenever something like this happens? And for the future, how can future presidents avoid this, right? It's the best thing would be to find lessons learned historically so that presidents can just function in a manner that lets them focus on what the public wants to be focused on, and the Congress to focus on policymaking and serving the public, and not be dragged into controversies and potential improprieties and accusations that lead to a lot of time and energy spent on the appropriateness of serving in a role.
We're visiting with Professor Jose Villalobos. Dr. Villalobos is with the Political Science Department, and we're discussing impeachment proceedings and some of the history behind impeachment and what we can look forward to as far as what's going to be happening up ahead. You mentioned earlier about President Buchanan and him almost being impeached. So that was in 1860, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about President Lincoln with his administration. I'm sure that, as you mentioned, they were watching everybody very closely. Mm-hmm. So he must have been under a lot of
scrutiny,
yeah. Maybe, perhaps, because the war was on.
Well, yeah.
Every step he was doing was watching. And then the guy that you mentioned earlier that Andrew Johnson did not like was Mr. Stanton, the Secretary of War. Mm. And Lincoln and all of his cabinet, they worked very closely together. So I'm sure that they were watching every one of them, making sure they didn't do anything in their eyes wrong.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, we hear so much today about, like, we've been divided like never before. But there's an instance where we had the division from a civil war. Right. We had a civil war. And God forbid we ever have to have a civil war again in the future. You cannot imagine a more divided kind of set of circumstances. And so it's very interesting that you'd have Vice President Johnson become president, and he looks at the Secretary of War. He wants him removed, and there's this piece of legislation that says, and this is interesting because in class I like to talk about the difference between a purely partisan battle versus an institutional battle. Right? A partisan battle, that's the parties just fighting each other like two sports teams, right? It's the blue team versus the red team, the Democrats versus the Republicans. And whoever the president is, Republican or Democrat, the members of Congress, if they're on his team, they're on his side. If they're on the other team, they're against him, right? That's a purely partisan battle. An institutional battle is where you have this question of, well, who should be leading the way? Who has the right of way? Is it the executive with the president, or is it the legislative branch? And when they passed this law that said if the president wants to remove a major appointee who required to be approved by the Senate, then the Senate should also have a voice in that. And you have an executive, basically, I mean, even beyond just the person, right? The executive branch saying, hey, you know, this is a bad law. The president has the right to remove anybody he pleases. They serve at his pleasure, right? And the other institution is saying, well, we passed this law. It's the law of the land. And if you don't follow it, we're going to hold you accountable to it. And he tried to veto it. It didn't work. He ultimately said, well, I'm not going to wait for you to approve this. I'm going to do what I want to do. And they used that as the excuse to go after him on very solid grounds, right? Because if it's the law and you clearly don't follow it, right, he got impeached. But then he did not get removed by one vote. He could have easily been the first president in history to be officially removed from office. And there have been judges that had been impeached and even removed or they left, they resigned but were later acquitted. Or, you know, so there's always even the fuller aftermath of how things play out. But in that moment, there was this partisan battle to some extent, but really overarching was more of an institutional situation where there were members of his own party too saying, well, did we pass this piece of legislation? It had overwhelming support. And it's not just for this president of this current party, but it's for all future presidents. And that was the legislative branch kind of flexing its muscles. And until the judicial branch stepped in to sort of resolve that, you have this sort of institutional challenge. And that was more of a victory for the legislative branch, let's say, in that case. In other cases, presidents, like in foreign policy, presidents have expanded and done more with intervening overseas and in major conflicts. And Congress is always like, well, we're the ones that the Constitution says the Congress shall declare war and the Congress shall such and such. But oftentimes, presidents actually take the lead. And Congress has, in some ways, abdicated their power to presidents in certain instances, like in foreign policy. And so sometimes presidents are able to expand their powers at the where it comes at a cost to the Congress. In that case, the Congress was defending and exerting itself in trying to have a bigger role in removal. And we even see that in things like, we're here in Texas. The governor of Texas, at one point we had a president of Texas, right? But a governor of Texas who there was, you look at history where you have governors that have a lot of power for appointments and removal, and other times in history where you have state legislators that increase their power of having influence in the process as well, in similar ways of needing to have approval of the legislator to appoint people and also for removal.
One thing that I found interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that one vote that kept President Johnson from being impeached, President Kennedy featured him in his book, Profiles in Courage.
He was
one of the guys that he mentions there because he says it took a lot of courage to vote the way he did. And as we move forward, you talked about later on it was ruled that it was constitutional, what mm-hmm. President Johnson was trying to do. Is that the same thing that President Nixon did with the Saturday Night Massacre?
Yeah, where you've got the situation where the president is telling members of his staff to do something and they refuse to do it, and so then it comes to a point where do you just give up? And you're the commander in chief, you're the president, but your staff is not following, and so do you then just give up, or do you do the massacre? Do you fire them all? And then when that happens, what response do you get from legislators? Because there's supposed to be checks and balances happening, and so the executive is on its own, and the president does what he wants with his staff. But if something happens, that looks like it's being done for the wrong reasons, and that it's undermining good public service, then the other what branches can also look at that and step in and use it for cause of concern and maybe even include it as part of a reason to hold a president accountable at the top level, even to impeach and remove.
We're visiting with Professor Jose Villalobos. Dr. Villalobos is a professor in political science. We're discussing the impeachment process, some of the history behind it, and what we can expect to see in the coming weeks. So tell us now, Professor Villalobos, guide us kind of like a not play-by-play, but what's going to happen next, and then the role that are taken now that they have drafted articles of impeachment against President Trump.
Sure. So, and there's these two articles. There may have been an expectation of more, but they've tried to focus it, I guess, on the two main, accusations coming from the majority Democrats in the House, led under Nancy Pelosi, and that is an abuse of power for the president seeking help from foreign assistance to investigate the Bidens, arguably one of, if not his most prominent potential opponent for the upcoming election. And as of this morning, the latest poll I saw for Iowa had him in a statistical dead heat with Mayor Pete and Bernie Sanders, but leading. So he's still, and there's, you can get into the whole conversation too about the impropriety of his son's relationships and things he got involved with in Ukraine. But that's the main accusation, to take the taxpayer-funded money and say, we're going to withhold this. We need a favor in order for you to get this. And saying in that phone call that, you know, to look into the Bidens. And then into the reporters on the White House lawn of what exactly did he expect from Ukraine, and he said, "Well, that if they are going to do the right thing, that they would investigate the Bidens." And then he also said, "China should also investigate." I think at that point, this is where the main argument from the Democrats is coming. And on the other side, you have, of course, the polar opposite perspective of the most supportive Republicans, in what is right now so far very much more a partisan kind of battle that we're seeing play out. Arguing that it's much to do about nothing, and make comparisons that say that the president hadn't done anything that merits impeachment, and it's just this big debate about exactly how everything has played out, and whether it does or doesn't merit going to the level that we've gone to this point. You try to be as objective about it as possible as a scholar and sort of observing what's happening on both sides. You try to follow the facts. And then, of course, you agree to disagree when you get to the normative implications, right, in each one of us. That's our job as citizens, right? Whether it's in our careers or we're just, as everyday citizens, we ultimately have to judge for ourselves. What do we think? And I try to come up with some of the takeaways that anybody can at least agree to on the basic merits, right, which is that it's not good for us to have this impeachment process happening, whether you look at it that the president forced it upon us by his actions. We went through the whole thing with the Mueller report, and there were, you know, we have 6 guilty people who got in big trouble out of that administration. But Trump survived that process. And then now this new thing came up almost immediately after the Mueller report and all of that process concluded. The Ukraine situation began to rear its head. And so whether you see it as the president causing this, or that the Democrats found an opportunity, sort of like you said, you know, we're in the years of the time of Lincoln, after Lincoln's assassination, that what can we find that it's something inappropriate that we can jump on and get a person impeached, right? Whichever way you look at it, it's not a good thing for us to have to be going through this. It's a sad chapter. But it is good in the sense that we are a country that cares about accountability. And so what can we learn about the process? Luckily, in all of our history, we've only had a very small number of these happening, right? We've had 45 presidents, and this is going to be the third who gets impeached. So how, looking forward, can any president from either side, and again, a lot of times if you want to really think about just current politics, I mean, you've got the name Clinton and Trump. Those are the names that are out there. And then you've got other very recent names. You've got the Obama name, and you've got the Bush name, and you've got a couple of Bushes there too, right? So they've all presidents have their times of controversy and some levels of investigations over some kinds of improprieties. But to get to impeachment, it's a very serious thing. So what can we learn from what we're going to see about how presidents can act? And I like when you get to talking about ethics, there's always that sort of way of thinking about ethical issues, that there are things that are the rules that you have to follow. And then there's also that sense of how can you function in a way that you don't even project a possible impropriety? How can we set a higher standard so that it doesn't even become a question? There has to be a way of serving in public office, and again, not just for presidents, for legislators, for judges, for anyone, that we the people can have people serving at our consent, our consent to be governed on our behalf, and focusing on how to solve societal challenges, how to serve the public good, come up with good policymaking, and do it in a way that leaves a positive legacy for everyone involved, right? Because in this situation, you're going to have a stain on this presidency that will last for all history, and you're going to have everyone involved in it too, on both sides. How are they going through the process? Are they doing it in a judicious manner? Are they basing everything on the facts? Are they making an assessment that's for the country first and foremost, or is it all pure political bickering and it's just going to look like we're just airing our dirty laundry? At the end of this process, will something good come out of it that we as a country can move forward with? Or will it just mark another chapter of ugly partisan battle that will result in more impeachments in the future? So I hope that it comes into a way that in the future we'll have more presidents that will avoid things like perjury and abuse of power, even the appearance of any kind of thing related to that, as opposed to more and more political leaders in the future just being accused of all sorts of things because we lower our standards in how we serve the public.
Well, Dr. Villalobos, thank you so much for giving us an insight on some of this. I'm sure we're going to have to bring you back to explain the next process, but thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
We've been visiting with Professor Dr. Jose Villalobos. He's a political science professor. His area of expertise is the presidency, and we've been discussing the impeachment process. The Weekend is taped and produced at KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Sam Cassiano. Our producer is Sam Cassiano. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.